This is Ingrid Kincaid. It's week two of the Norse wheel class, the runes and the wisdom of the ancestors. And it is November the 14th, halfway through the month. Wow. Okay, so I'm going to show the group, just for the purpose of showing you, I made a deck of cards that originally, it will eventually go with this class when the book is completed. And the deck work, you could still work with it. I'm looking for another source for printing cards because these are printed out of the country. It's really crazy. So you could use this deck of cards. I have five of them, and I would sell the five at a discount if people are interested. What they have are the 33 runes, the rune cards, as you will see them in the book. I'll pass them around. So they've got the runes. They have five winds. These were all hand-drawn by Laura, who is the illustrator also of the rune book. There are 12 animals that are from Norse mythology. And then there's a card that is a card of the world tree, but cut like you would cut to see the growth rings, rather than it being up and down, because that's the way it's always shown. But the sagas say that that even Asgard, the realm of the gods, has a root into the well, and so my sense is that they're all down in the roots. There's no hierarchy of them above and below because of the way it writes about them. So Laura decided to cut the tree and do a ring drawing and position the nine worlds that way, so there is no hierarchy with them. So that's an original drawing that's also in here. I will reference some of these animals as part of the talking. We already last week talked about the squirrel. And the squirrel is very much a part of the tree and very much a part of the concept of the wheel of the year. And then I think I spoke a little bit about the world serpent, Jormungand, which is also in the deck. And these are I'll pass the deck around, but I just wanted to show you. This is the drawing that she did for the west wind, which reminds me of water. You know, the wind, water, and this was the drawing that's for the center. And I can put those up, I can put the winds up on the website, up on the private page as well. And I'll pass the deck around if you just wanted to.
Did you have the deck last time?
I've had the deck a long time, but because I never finished the book, I didn't.
I can't remember if I bought it or not.
Yeah, I think you did. I think you have one of the decks. So the other thing that I did was I took a drawing of the circle. Just did my own circle, and I positioned. So I wrote different things around it because I think if you'll make many, many of these, maybe make one and copy it. And then start exploring with yourself how you work with the runes and the directions. It's hard to describe it in the first class because you don't have anything to reference yet.
Yeah.
So, for instance, I took the 12 animals and I put them in the four little squares in the center. Not that they belong in a specific place, but just to place them. I took the there's actually nine runes, the runes of the giants, and the ninth rune is the one that's in the middle, which is the rune called Gar. So that's there, and it also forms the drawing of the wheel. And then I placed the other eight of them on the inner circle, which is Ak, Os, Yir, Ior, Ear, Korth, Kalk, Stan, and then Gar in the middle. That's the 33rd rune. And around the outside, I did the 24, Feu, Urus, Thurisas, like that. And then I went on the interior, because you do 12 and then 12. And then positioning north, winter equinox, dark. You know, the winter is the time of the dark, the north is the time of the cold. So I positioned it just as we would normally think of the way a wheel is, you know, like a Celtic wheel or the Wiccan wheel. But instead of having the straight lines that way, to realize that winter begins here and goes all the way, you know, winter begins on October 31st and goes all the way to February 2nd, across mm-hmm. quarters, because it's not just a single event, but the solstice, winter solstice right. is. So I'll pass that around, because and this is also my vision. I'm always thinking in terms of bigger things and more things. I see this, I see it as a wheel that maybe has a little, what do you call them?
A Brad
in the middle. That if you know, like when they do the color wheels for art, that if you had a wheel and a wheel and another, like a mm-hmm. square, like, and that it could spin and they had cutouts on mm-hmm. them, that as you did readings, for instance, with yourself, or you selected, let's say, that from the deck, you picked a wind, and so here's a little pile with five winds, and you drew a wind, and you said, oh, okay, my reading today is taking me to the north. And then you wanted to work with, well, what runes show up for me for the north today? What animal shows up? You could also say, well, what wind shows up? Because there's maybe another wind that's blowing in the north other than the north wind. So, but if you had it drawn so that it could be turned, I mean, I don't know who would do that, how that would be created, but I always put these things out because there are visionaries. I'm a teacher, but I'm not. And I see things, but I don't always know how to craft them. You know, like, I don't do underwater basket weaving. So that's part of it. And this, as we go, it becomes really exciting the more you're...
You didn't have that last time, though.
Well, I just did it tonight. I just drew it tonight. I think last time Laura has a card where she... that's like the deck that also has... the runes laid out there in different ways, because there's
this one.
Yes, where did
I got that off your website?
Okay, yeah, that's on my website. But the problem is, once you print it, then everybody thinks that that's the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can beat the drum every week and say there is no way that this is supposed to be. So I'm going to say, I put the boar in the west, the wild boar. Now, you know, I think of the pigs. They root around in the fall, and they're digging for the truffles and the acorns, and they're
slaughter time.
And I think of them in the oak forests around the leaves, and so that to me is where I put the boar. But that doesn't mean that. Anything, because I'm making that up. That's for me. And I might draw the boar and be working with the north, and I might have to think about, like, what does that have to do with the stillness of winter? Where do they go? How do they hibernate? And which brings me to mind, brings to my mind a saying that my Oklahoma grandfather had, which was, it's going to be a hard winter when pigs run around with sticks in their mouths. Mm-hmm. Now, that was an expression he would use when he saw people smoking, because he was not a smoker, and that was kind of a negative thing to say about a smoker, a pig running around with a stick in the mouth. But the actual saying comes from the fact that when the winters, the pigs know that the winters are going to be hard, and they actually build nests. They gather sticks and create nesting places. So sometimes as you work with this old information, you know, this information, because it is coming from ancestral line, it is coming from our own people and our own culture, and a lot of the sayings that we have in this country were brought here from Europe, even if we're not real aware of them. And as you start this work, you begin to find that things make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and they fit in with other pieces, and it's like all of a sudden, oh, now I understand. Now I understand something that I didn't understand before. There's another part, I'm just not even into the notes yet, but there's another part that is mentioned in one set of notes. We often hear it expressed or explained in the Norse mythology, stories about a goddess named, or a giantess named Sif, S-I-F, Sif. She had long golden hair. Loki cut it off as a trick. And she's referred to as a corn goddess. Anybody heard of that? The corn goddess. But the thing is that corn wasn't brought to Europe until
came
from the Americas. It was new on the scene. The people were not eating corn, and to have an old Norse goddess be a corn goddess doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Terry, I don't know. She's taking notes. She's gonna put the cards there for her. She can get them if she wants. So then you have to go back and you start thinking in the English language, where does this word corn appear? Well, we call things peppercorns, and we call things barleycorn, and the origin of corned beef, the origin of the word corn actually means a hard kernel, so like a piece of grain. So something, a barleycorn was actually like a pearl of barley. To be corned beef, it was because they used hard kernels or hard crystals of salt, wasn't really finely ground salt. Peppercorn is a hard seed, kernel. So she is technically a corn, probably spelled with a K, a corn goddess, but not a maize goddess. Mm. She's not a goddess of maize, which is what the ears of yellow stuff was brought to Europe from the Americas and was new on the scene.
When as I was growing up, I only knew corn as wheat.
Mm-hmm.
And we eventually had cans of maize, which we called sweet corn, to differentiate it.
Yeah, and you're from
England.
So it's just these kinds of pieces start fitting together, and then you have information that helps to make sense. To something, say, well, how could she be? She's not like a Native American corn goddess because we weren't growing corn. And then following that research, I was doing something with the chestnuts because that was part of the ritual I just did. And before coming with the corn making, like polenta and that kind of thing, I'm thinking, well, what did they substitute? What were they using? They used chestnuts, a huge amount of chestnuts. And chestnuts, when they're roasted and then ground, make a paste that's like flour. And it was used like flour for making types of bread, as were acorns. And I know that because I grew up in California, and the California coastal Indians pretty much existed on acorns. That was the way they made their bread and the way they had their meal, you know, their like mush, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's also really interesting to see how often we can find our way back to the stories that are more applicable to the actual climate and terrain and the way the people were living, and not always think in terms of the overlay of the language and the food and the experience that wasn't there. And I mentioned that also in the notes, or the fact that it's really time that we stop calling, it's time that we start using our own words for Mother Earth. Why would we continue to call it Gaia? Because again, this comes out of the Greek culture. Didn't we have a name for the earth that was our own? And people's like, well, I don't know, what is it? But it takes some time to start doing research. What was what was she called? Instead of always falling back on the names that come to us from the conquerors. And one way that you can explore is Thor. Everybody knows about Thor, but nobody knows who Thor's mother was. Ask all these macho guys with their little Thor's hammer. Do you know who your grandma is? Well, his mother was Earth. Her name was Yord. J-O-R-D. Thor's mother was Yord. So if we're going to talk about, why can't we talk about Yord instead of Gaia? Well, because people wouldn't know what we were talking about. Well, let's make them aware. Why do we always talk about chakras? Why don't we speak of them as cauldrons? That's the way the Celts describe those energy wheels. Why don't we talk about bettering? Find a word that was instead of Reiki. Why aren't we using runic symbols instead of Reiki symbols? It's not that it's not there. It's just our tendency is to always go to the thing that's the easiest and the most common and the most popular. And then we don't go any further. So that's another part I believe in some of this work, is opening up your awareness to the fact that there was an entire culture, a spiritual culture, that was rich and deep and ancient long before your ancestors were forced to be Christians. Because, just look at history. It wasn't done usually like, oh, I'll take crucifixion, right, from Monty Python. I'll take crucifixion. Okay, so I want to do a little check-in because you got sent home with some homework. And it was very simple. Just think of it, you know. Who used the center in any way this past week? And it's not a test. You won't get dinged. Who had an opportunity to use it?
I did, yeah, a couple of times.
You want to share? You don't have to be specific if you don't want, but
just a couple general times, once at home and once at work, just like thinking about the class, like, okay, I'm going to try doing that. So it wasn't a specific situation, mm-hmm. you know, cause, effect kind of thing, but just sort of like, oh, I'm supposed to do my homework.
Okay. Kind of, yeah. And so bring it into mind is the way we start, right? Mm-hmm. Just bring it into the awareness. How about you?
I've found my stuff, two of my stuffs, and I used one and just very briefly went to the center. Mm-hmm. And
what did it feel like?
It felt like it took me out of my world for that few, you know, seconds mm-hmm. that I was there, and I kind of had a vision of something which I drew, and it was very stabilizing, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good word to use, mm-hmm. stabilizing. We have a lot of chaos around us, don't we? Yeah.
I have this thing I do anyway where I go to kind of get myself aligned. So for me, like, I actually did call, there was a charity I used to be involved with down in the gorge, and one of the gentlemen used to do carving. So I called to see if he was still there, and he did inmate staffs, but he's gone. Mm-hmm. So my staff is kind of doing this. Mm-hmm. And so, but that was something I already did, so I know during the week there were a number of times where I work out of my house by myself mm-hmm. 3 days a week, and then I volunteer one day, and Tuesdays I read at Celestial Awakening, so I find myself doing this when I need to realign or something doesn't, so this is my step, and
Well, and that's when I had said find a word that was a trigger type of word. Yeah. It's the same. You can do a body motion. Mm-hmm. It's a great. Yeah, and we don't always have our sticks with us, right?
But the sound effects works too.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been trying to focus on learning how to find my center at work. Mm-hmm. I work in a really male-dominated environment, I was in a meeting today, in fact, where I'm put in charge of a project that I don't know anything about. It's not my normal job function, and all the members are senior managers. I have to corral and do something that they don't want to do, so it's very unpleasant to some extent, and I really found myself having to call myself back to my center to be able to maintain the control of the meeting. I find that a lot at work, really trying to have to step back and center and just really be present.
Yeah. And if you think about the squirrel, you know, because a lot of times we're up in our heads because we've got something we're trying to deal with, and yet what you actually need is to access your root. You need to access that foundation, that stability, that place that's not up here, that's so high vibration and, you know, busy. And you can use the squirrel sometimes. It's just to come back to center and send Ratatoskr up and down. Okay, bring this in. I've got this information. I need it. But how does it communicate with my rooted, stable, ancient self? And that rather than causing trouble, I always think of the squirrel as bringing the balance back. And then another place is to see if you can wear the word sovereign. You know, that's always used with the royalty and the king and the queen, and there's a lot of negative around that. However, it's a really powerful ancient word, and we claim that we are regal and we are royal. It's not about power over anyone. It's about actually recognizing within yourself your own sovereignty. And that place, when you claim that, it doesn't take it away from anyone. It just gives you the power within yourself to know how to make wise choices, wise decisions, and move. You didn't work with anything this week.
Actually, unintentionally. I knew I was coming to the wheel class, and I remember the standing in the center. And so, yes, I've been using it just to... I have felt really, you know, my grounding, my balance has been really tilted. So just working with sitting and bringing everything back to a straight, you know, positioning.
Yeah, and that's a good way to work with it as well. So we're going to start, unless anyone has something else they want to share. Nope. Last week we talked about the Eivaz rune of the yew tree, the rune of life and death, above and below, a rune that spins. We spoke briefly about the Dagas. I'm going to talk a little more about Dagas tonight. We spoke a little bit about Eeyore, I do believe, about the X in the center, which is similar to the Eeyore rune, which is Jormungand. And again, as you have, you all have books now, I believe, right? So you can find the runes in the book. That's a good way to start becoming familiar with them. And in the West, I have several runes that I would put there. We may not talk about all of them tonight, but you can write them down, the names, and then find them in the book. The rune Jera, J-E-R-A. The rune Otila, O-T-H-I-L-A. A-R, which is spelled E-A-R, like ear. Quorth, C-W-E-O-R-T-H.
Can you say that again?
C-W-E-O-R-T-H. Quorth. Dagaz. D-A-G-A-Z. Hagalaz. H-A-G-A-L-A-Z.
Can you say it again?
Dagaz.
D-A-G-A-Z.
And then Hagalaz.
Hagalaz.
H-A-G-A-L. Hagal. And then A-Z. Hagalaz. And then Kenaz. K-E-N-A-Z. And Nauthis. N-A-U. T-H-I-Z.
Oh, is he?
Now these. N-A-U-T-H-I-Z.
I-Z, okay.
Okay. So that's a lot of runes, but and again, like I had shared, this is not specifically a rune class. It gives you a taste of the runes and a little bit of knowledge about them and ways to work with them. And then if you're interested in studying the runes, that's an 11-week class that just scratches the surface. But, you know, covering 3 runes a week. So we're going to start west. And using the tool, no matter where you are in your life right now, no matter what's going on in your life, take a step and step into the center. So you just use that energy. It doesn't matter if it's chaos or crazy or you're driving or you're visiting your mother in Texas. Step into the center. And then when you make that step, then determine, you take your bearings, you determine where you are in relationship to the earth. Actually, where am I literally, physically at this time? And which way do I need to turn to face the setting sun? Yes, and that's pretty much behind me. That's the direction in this house, the way that we are oriented. We talked a lot about orient, but where am I positioned? Where, because I want this to be living for you. Because if you can relate it to actual circumstance, you can access it more easily. That it's not just theoretical. So, if again, I'm going to just literally, I'm washing the dishes and I say, okay, this is too much. I'm going crazy. I'm just going to step here. All right, where am I? I'm in Portland. I'm in my apartment. Where does the sun go down? Well, I'm going to have to. And if you use your body, not that you can always do that, but as often as you can use your body to have the experience, it takes you out of the mental into the physical. And not that one is better than the other, it's just we're so used to having them separated, and we are in a time in history, which is a relatively small time in history compared to the eons of human life, where we don't have to know these things. We think we don't have to know them because, you know, everybody navigates for us and it's really not important. And yet it is, because we can't live on the earth without the relationship that exists with the seasons and with the directions and with the horizon and all, you know, all of it. So use your body. Turn and face the direction where you can see that the sun is going to go down. Now, if I go out onto Burnside and I look west, I can see the building called The Pink.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really beautiful. It's a big, so tall, beautiful High-rise. It's pink. Yeah. It's actually the windows. And it turns pink when the sun starts to go down. It's a really amazing experience to see it. Now, does that mean I'm not like my ancestors living on the edge of the glacier with the howling winds? And, you know, well, it doesn't matter. I live in Portland. I live in an apartment where there's sidewalks and asphalt. I still know where the sun sets. Now, I see it. Imagine where you live, and when you face west and you would watch the sun go down, what would you see? What would you be looking at from your house?
Right at my neighbor's wall.
Okay, so then if in theory, if you look at your neighbor's wall, you would actually see the sun disappear behind their roof, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would be like at 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Okay, so but that's the truth of your experience.
Mm-hmm.
So she, You know, so Linda sees the sun disappearing behind a roof at 2 o'clock. She lives in the Arctic, right? So what about you? What do you see?
I'm in my back, would be in my backyard, and the sun sets, you know, across the backyard and the neighbor's yard and the fence and trees and that.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Teresa, where you live on more land, right?
You, okay. My forest, the west side of the forest.
Okay. So you'd watch it kind of drop behind trees.
Yeah, this is elevated, so actually, yeah.
Trees on a mountain? Trees on a mountain.
And so I live on the west side, lee side of the street, so I would see across the street and the neighbor's house.
Okay.
And I would sit behind their house.
And Christine?
I'm pretty much the same. There's kind of like a gap in between two neighbors' houses. I don't see it go all the way down. I see, you know, a little bit when clouds get pink and so on.
So we kind of have a sense that it's getting to be the setting of the sun. Mm-hmm. I would also encourage during the course of this 5 weeks we're together, look for an opportunity to get out of the city somehow, so that you can actually see the sun set someplace. Now, you may not go all the way to the beach, but if you haven't watched the sun disappear into the ocean for a very long time, it's worth it. It's worth that, or to watch it disappear literally behind a hill, so that you can watch the sun and have it disappear. And that's the essence of where we're going with the West, is we're orienting ourselves on the earth in relationship to where the sun, when and where the sun disappears. Then that takes you to the next step, is when the sun disappears, what follows it? What comes, if we're facing the disappearing sun, what's coming back, what's coming up over the moon, that's true. Full moon, you know, that's true.
Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, there are a lot of times the moon is out during the daytime.
Yeah,
that's true.
So what always follows us is behind, right behind us, if we're looking at the sun going down, but right behind us is coming the dark, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So the dark is moving into our experience, and we see, we're looking at not the science, not the technology, not the book learning, not, you know, all the mathematics. What do you actually see?
Stars.
Uh-huh.
Possibly clouds. If I was Aboriginal, I would see the dark spaces. That's what they see.
Yes.
Shooting stars sometimes, satellites.
Mm-hmm. A gentler light.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then depending on how many stars, and I mean, we don't actually experience darkness. Most of us have rarely, if maybe once in your life, ever had darkness. But that's true. You begin, what begins to appear as the dark is appearing are things that we can't see in the light. We can't see the stars. They're up there all the time, aren't they? But we can't see them. They begin to appear. So going back to more indigenous or an aboriginal thinking, we can't live that way and we can't have that mind because we're not. And we can still understand that if our thinking mind isn't figuring out that the earth is turning and the sun is, you know, what's happening is the sun just disappeared. It's getting dark. And it's the end. It's actually the end of a day, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And when something ends, something always begins. Always. So what begins? If the day just ended, what begins?
Night.
But we don't talk about it that way, do we?
Mm-hmm.
Because we call a 24-hour period
a day.
And then we have dark and we have light, but it's still a day, but we also call the light time day and we call the dark time night, but the whole thing is a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's like saying, this is an orange and this is an apple, and an apple is an orange, And a banana is an orange, and a pear is an orange, because orange is fruit. Instead of the word fruit. We don't have a neutral word for a 24-hour period, unless somebody comes up with one that I've not thought of. No, we even our language, we find it hard in our language. Because if we're following the 24-hour kind of concept, and this is the ending of the day, then technically another day has just begun. So that's why when we look at the old Jewish system and we look at the Celtic system, their day began when the sun disappeared. That was the beginning of the next day, because the day, this day just ended and a new day just started. So he kind of...
It makes more sense, actually.
It does. I mean, when you like, yes, it does. So that then is the Dagas rune. The Dagas rune with regard to dark and light. And the Dagas is the one that looks like the bow tie. Does everybody want me to draw it? Okay, it just looks like a bow tie. Like that. And so the Dagas, the concept of the Dagas rune, and that's why I said last week, even though people call it the rune of daybreak, that's like cheating it, because that's only half of the experience. Mm-hmm. It isn't the rune of daybreak. It's actually a rune that represents that period of dark and light. And it is a 24-hour period, but it's always changing as to how much dark there is and how much light there is. But what's consistent is that there is darkest of night and brightest of day, and that this, then, this little piece in the middle is the actual sunset or the sunrise. That's the moment that the sun appears or disappears. And then so imagining you're kind of going around it like an infinity sign, it just gets bigger, 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 until it's as bright as it's going to be that particular 24-hour period. And then it goes back, and it's as dark as it's going to be that 24-hour period. So if you didn't have a clock, and you were living your life measuring these periods from the sun just disappeared, the sun just appeared, it would always be changing for you. Because you were counting from the experience of what you were seeing and sensing and feeling, not from an arbitrary clock. But that's what's confusing for us. We really actually are confused even in our bodies by this. So Dagas then is a beautiful rune to not only work with for the West, because it represents that midpoint when the sun disappears and now it's going, you know, is the day going away or is the night arriving? Both. At that particular point, it's both. And that is darkness coming out of the light or is light going into the darkness? That's another question that we could ask with the Dagas rune. Dagas is also a rune that you can use with regard to the turning of the seasons. And that's, again, this is a repeat from last week, but if you think in terms of these being the solstices, so this is the longest night and this is the longest day, and then you could say the equinox is that point in the middle. Either equinox is that moment when it's equal, and then it starts to become something else. So you turn and you face the sun as it is disappearing into the ground or into the water. And when that disappearing happens, it becomes dark. And then you begin to see things that you don't see when it's light. And you begin to have experiences that you don't have when it's light. And you realize also that that's where your dead go. Because we put them into the water or we put them into the ground. Mm-hmm. Even if we burn them, that, you know, the ash mm-hmm. goes into the air, but it falls down. So the sun just went where our ancestors go. So to sit in the West and to be still with the experience, or to stand and face the West, is to also face the place where you are going. And then how long that sun is gone out of sight, going on, where does it go? You know, again, we're not looking at the circle ball hanging in the sky and the sun isn't, we're just, where did it go? And when's it coming back? And that's where my ancestors went. And that's where I'm going. And in the Northern Hemisphere, the weather moves from west to east. It's not like the trade winds. It's the
Jet stream.
Yes, thank you. And what do we call before the jet? Right, I don't know. But the weather moves.
Named jet after it.
Yes,
so.
I think so. And I wonder if jet has to do with darkness.
Well, the stone jet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So again, this is great to find patterns in language, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, if that's where the ancestors go, and we start talking about the wind being a power of creation. It carries words. That's how we speak. It, the wind can bring information. The wind can bring wisdom. Then it's no wonder that the Celts teach that turning and facing the west is where the wisdom from the ancestors come. Because their wisdom is being carried to us on the wind. Because that's how they sing. That's how they speak, is with the air. So the west wind could be bringing us the wisdom of the ancestors. And the wisdom of the ancestors is coming to us from the dark. Because that's where they went. That's where the sun goes. So you could use the configuration of the wheel as a way for you to focus on meditation time in the quiet hours of the darkness. It's really wonderful to not turn on lights. This is another practice that I would encourage, at least, you know, once during the month or once a week. Don't turn lights on as it begins to get dark. Allow yourself to actually have the experience of going into the dark. And yes, okay, I've got to do this and I've got to do that and I need to see, but that's our mind chatter. See what it feels like. See how long you're comfortable sitting in the west. And in this darkness and in the silence, can you hear your ancestors speaking to you? What do you hear? What do you know? What are you sensing? Because we are suffering from light pollution, we're suffering from sound pollution. Most of us don't like to have silence in our lives. We automatically turn on music or on TV. We're not comfortable with the dark, we're not comfortable with silence. So this is an opportunity to reconnect with the ancestors, reconnect with the wisdom of the cycles, and see how you can fit in with that in your body, because we want to embody this. We don't want to just study it and learn about it. Anybody have any questions so far?
I do live in the country, so I don't have the light issues that
some
city
of us
has.
Do. Right.
Mm-hmm. And I do think it's interesting because, in reality, I prefer the night to the day because it's less abrasive to me. But sitting in the dark, it is really not dark.
No.
There's an amazing amount of light when there are not lights available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's really amazing.
Yeah. So we've actually lost our ability to see. And in one way we can't see the stars because of light pollution, but we also have lost our ability to see in the dark because we always have the lights on. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, everybody, they're changing all the different kinds of light bulbs, and I think that those types of lights do things to our brains and our signals that maybe we're not even aware of. Candlelight, you can sit and stare at a candle and it doesn't hurt your eyes. Mm-hmm. But some of this stuff is just like crazy.
Yeah, I was out camping this summer and we had a little flashlight. We found that it was, in the end, better to turn the flashlight off because putting the flashlight on limited our vision more. Because then you can only see this tiny little spot and everything else is blind.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because there's that your eye opens up to, closes down to because of the light, and then you lose the opening that's necessary to see the other things. So we're going to keep going with the West. So West could be a time, facing the West, could be a time of looking back. And looking back in the sense that you are connecting with the ancestors. Let's go back to what I talked about last week, which was, you know, are we going forward? Are we going backward? The present and the future exists in the moment. I mean, the past and the future exists right in the moment. So if we're looking back, which is where they went, it's also looking forward because it's where we're going. And there's a poem from, I have to shuffle all my papers. I wanted to read a poem. It's called Ode to the West Wind. I'm not going to read all of it, but bear with me. I always think I've got the notes in order, but I never do. Percy Shelley wrote a poem called Ode to the West Wind. Supposedly political, but it's got a lot of really great sayings in it that I think are quite interesting. O wild west wind, thou breath of autumn's being, thou from whose unseen presence the leaves dead are driven, like ghosts from an enchanter fleeing. Wild spirit, which art moving everywhere, destroyer and preserver, like withered leaves to quicken a new birth, and by the incantation of this verse, scatter, as from an unextinguished hearth fire, ashes and sparks. O wind, if winter comes, can spring be far behind? Did anybody know this poem? It's really long, very beautiful poem about the west wind. So what I liked here is he calls the wind the destroyer and the preserver. And goes back to the theme of the runes over and over again. In the fall, when the leaves drop off the tree, they are dying, and then they have died, and then they be composted back into the earth. But the preservation is that the seeds are released, and they're carried it by the wind to be planted someplace. They're carried in the fur of animals. They're eaten and pooped out someplace else. Mm-hmm. And so in this time of dying, the destruction time of this time of year is also the preservation time. Just like we know in the dying time is the birthing time. We can't separate that from the wheel. It's also why it's a wheel that moves through the cycles, and it doesn't really matter whether you're going forward or backward, even though we follow it a certain way because of the seasons, you know, and the way we progress through the experience. But in truth, it doesn't matter, because they both, the preservation and the destruction, the dark and the light, the birth and the death, it all exists in the present moment, because each thing carries that. That would be another reason I would say not to ever be hung up on this whole thing about is the rune upside down and is it right side up, and like people go crazy with that, because it doesn't matter. The rune holds, it holds both destruction and preservation, any of the runes, because they can't exist separate from each other. Just like the light and the dark doesn't, and it's not that they're the same. They're just part of a cycle that is ever-changing, and there are these moments of sunrise and sunset where it's neither. And that moment of birth, the baby comes forth, there's just a moment when it's either dead or it's alive, because if it doesn't take a breath, it dies. And that's that moment. I mean, I know all the technology and the reviving and all that, but there's that moment when you die, that if you don't take a breath, you die. And that's at the end of your life, and that's at the beginning of your life. So, I love that. If winter's here, then spring is close at hand. And we know that with all of these movements, that when there's one, if it's the darkest point of night, then we know that the light is close, and vice versa, because it's always moving, always changing, never staying still. So the next, looking at that, we'll look first at the rune, and next at the rune Yira. Yira is a rune that can be seen written in two ways. One of them is this two separate, like greater than, less than. Okay, it looks like that. And there is another way that this rune is shown. You'll see it every once in a while. And you take those greater than, less than signs, and they're butted up against each other on a single vertical line. Anybody seen the Yira written like that before? You know, so it's nice to know that there are different ways, because you see something and think, whoa, what is that? So how I have experienced these two forms is this is turning. This Yira is a rune that's always turning, like a gyroscope. As long as it's attached to the single staff, the single vertical line, which is an Isa, it's like turning through one complete cycle of something. So I use an example of my father died in the late fall, and I walked every day for an entire year. I walked in the same neighborhood, and I, whether it was raining, freezing, it doesn't matter, I walked. What was it like to walk in the fall when my father was gone? What was it like to walk in the winter? What was it like to walk in the spring? I went through a complete physical experience of a cycle of an entire year, which feels like being stuck on that vertical line. And when that happened, when I had completed that, then I could pull away from that. And I was still going through the cycles of the year, but I was going through them with another, not just the spinning motion in place, but the spinning motion and then the spinning within the spinning. Mm-hmm. So now I say, okay, I went through another year without my father, but it's gotten bigger. I had to have the first experience in order to have the second. Mm-hmm. I believe that this is a really crucial point in life for all of us, that we don't allow ourselves to go through a cycle. You know, we end one relationship, we're off to another. We grieve a death and we're off to something else. I'm just picking things out of the air for examples. But that, have you ever considered what it would be like to allow yourself to have an experience that's singular, with just, you know, and like I I got fired from my job. Yes, I have to go get a new job. But you're not really finished with what happened. You need to have an experience of what's it like to feel that in a cycle so that you can really understand what the next part is, which is honoring that, but now it's bigger and expanded. It may not be that everything has to take an entire year, physical year of seasons, but it might take a 24-hour cycle for you. It might take, a cycle, a month cycle between one time of bleeding and one time and the next time of bleeding. Let's say, I don't know if any of us are still bleeding. It might not be an appropriate example, but using Yira and understanding cycles. And that this rune can apply to the changing from light to dark. It can apply to the changing of the cycle of a moon, and it can apply to the changing of the whole year. So you could use this, turning and facing the west, sitting and going into the dark, allowing yourself to have the experience of silence, and allow yourself to have an experience, whatever that is going to look like for you. And ask yourself, where am I now? And what does it feel like? And what's the cycle that's ahead of me? What am I going into? So Yira also teaches this part of the West, is it teaches that you can't rush anything and you can't delay anything. Now what that means, because this time of year is also the going into the dark of winter, the going into the cold of winter. This is the time of year that we call the time of the harvest. And with the harvest, you can't rush it, and you can't delay it. And that takes wisdom, experience, discernment, not information, not just knowledge, wisdom. That comes from discerning and paying attention. Because if you pick the fruit too soon, it won't ripen, it has no taste. Everybody knows that from the grocery store. A cantaloupe that doesn't taste like anything because I gassed it. If you wait too long, there's that one day that they fall off the tree and then they're no good because they hit the ground. Or there's a hailstorm that comes and everything is beaten into the earth. Mm-hmm. And you could have paid attention to the weather if perhaps you had paid attention to the wind. Right? Mm-hmm. You've known the way the wind was blowing. You would have known that you needed, get everybody here. We have to harvest this crop because we'll lose it otherwise. So you can't rush, but you also can't delay. And that's a hard place to be in life. And Yira is a wonderful rune to work with, sitting in the West and asking yourself that, where is the wisdom that I need to know what to do about this? Do I need to wait? Or do I need to pay attention and rush? And we're not comfortable with that either. Because we're also taught sometimes that if we don't have the answer or we don't know what we're doing, that there must be something wrong. Mm-hmm. For sure there's something wrong. You've got to figure this one out or fix it. And then on the other hand is also how many of us know that we stay way after the fruit fell off the tree, right? Yeah. way past the time when it needed to be gathered in. So that's one of the things also that you could talk to the ancestors about. You could sit in the West and you can go into the dark. You might find that you could sit in a rocking chair in front of the hearth fire in the dark with just the fire in the hearth and in the silence and listen for the song, listen for the answers. because it's there. And it's not that you don't know. It's you. It's like we have roots. We don't need to send them down. We just have forgotten how to connect with them. Mm-hmm. And so Yira is a great rune to use for that. The other part of the Yira rune that is so important to remember is that if you planted barley, barley's going to grow. Hello! You know, it's like, what a surprise! I thought I was going to get tomatoes. That's a law, isn't it? Isn't that a universal, universal law? That you put an acorn in the ground and you
get an oak tree.
If you don't like barley, don't plant it. If you don't like barley and you planted it and there's nothing else to eat,
you're eating it.
Oh well. Because you do have to eat sometimes what you've planted or go hungry. But let's hope you don't do it again. How many of you have planted again the same thing? And you're surprised that that's the thing that grew and you didn't like it in the first place? You may go out in the field and you maybe see a few volunteer sprouts of barley that grew up among the wheat that you planted, because that's nature, but it's not the whole crop. Because also a bird could have flown over and pooped out a barley corn, right? And there's a barley growing in my field. This is, again, the wisdom. This is how you can use this wheel as a way to access wisdom, practical, earth-based, indigenous wisdom, and apply it to your everyday life. Now, what about people before agricultural times? So let's go take the runes all the way back to the hunter-gatherer. It's the same principle, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And that if you go into a patch of berries and they're all dried up and shriveled because there wasn't enough rain, you can't pick them. What are you going to do with them? They don't have any taste. It's not worth your effort, is it? You're going to go find something else. You also, if you were a hunter-gatherer, would never take all of one thing. You know, you take a piece. Like, I used to go with a man in California who did wild crafting, wild gathering, and there was angelica root that grew where we were in Mendocino County, and he would always, he would just take a part of it. He would never take the whole thing, right, and always make an offering back, because he said, if I took it all, nothing will grow again.
Right.
These things we don't pay attention to anymore because we go to the grocery store. We can have anything and everything we want, any time of year. We don't pay attention to whether the soil has been depleted. We don't pay attention to whether or not we don't pay attention to the pig with the stick in the mouth, right? Mm-hmm. There's a storm coming. Should I have a little extra food in the house? We depend upon the radio, but go outside and look around, see what's happening. Because we've lost these skills. Again, it's not that this is the way we have to live and this is the best way. This is a spiritual teaching that brings you back to your body, brings you back to the earth, to paying attention. They would have had to decide, here's your discernment and your wisdom. We've had the harvest, we're going to have a feast. Can we eat all the food we've harvested? Probably not too smart, right? How much do we need to set aside for the winter?
And not just the winter, but for the next planting.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. Until the planting and it grows again. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's longer than just, it's February 2nd and yay. But you could go out and you could start getting little greens, or maybe you could get eggs from birds, but you have to pay attention to what you consumed and what you stored, and also you always had to save something to plant. So how would that apply in your daily life? You know, do you just use everything up all the time? Do you think in terms of saving something for planting? Do you, are you unconscious about your consuming? I talk a little bit in the notes about the old practice of gleaning. Anybody remember or know what gleaning is?
They still have it around here and up in the gorge too.
Yeah. And in harvest time, there it was actually a law in the nation of Israel. If you go back and read the Old Testament, it was the law that when they harvested a field, they had to leave the corners unharvested, and they couldn't go back and pick up a sheaf of something that they had harvested if they had left it behind. It had to be left for the gleaners, who were the widows, or the poor people, or, you know, unfortunates, the wanderers. So gleaning was written into a law, which allowed people, they had to go work for it, they had to go get it, but they weren't going to be arrested because they were on somebody else's land. We maybe can't do that, you know, I can't go pick the apples on that vacant lot because if I fall down and break my leg, I'm going to sue the owner, you know, all the crazy stuff that we do today. But we could start being conscious about the teachings of the Yira, the teachings of the wisdom of the harvest, in possibly what do we do with leftover food from banquets at, you know, all these big conference centers. What do we do with leftover food at the end of the day at Starbucks or stores, or, you know, how many places have you walked around in Portland and there's just food falling off the trees, literally.
Yeah.
When people are living there, it's like, there's a man up here, two blocks, that's the most glorious Asian pear tree. Now, I don't know, Asian pears cost like $2 a pear, right?
If you're lucky.
And they're just, he doesn't do anything, they just fall off on the ground. It's shocking. So that's, again, I mean, I'm going off like I always do, but put that also into the West. Now, let's talk about, why can't I see what time it is?
It's about 8:30.
Okay. All right. So, just briefly on some of these other runes that I want to touch on. The rune Otila was the next one that I said. Otila is the rune of ancestral home. And it's a great rune to put into the West because it's where also that our ancestors go. It's a rune about ancestors. It's a rune about living on the land, and if you lived on the land, you buried your ancestors on the land, and then you ate the food from the land, and so your ancestors were feeding you. This is initially when you were born, and then they feed you again after they die. So Otila is a rune that you might want to be with and ask in the West, what's the wisdom of my ancestors, which would mean that you'd have to start going back to find them. And you may not find them by name. You may not even know all the stories. However, when you sit in the dark and you see the stars come out and you go back into the silence, they start to talk to you. So Otila you could put in the West and be with it. And if you drew the West Wind card, or you wanted to work in the West and you drew Otila, then here's this beautiful message of, oh, okay, I need to spend a little bit more time in the ancestor corner. I need to connect with the ancestors because they may have something to tell me. There may be something that I need to learn. Next rune that I said was the rune called Ar, spelled like ear. It's a death rune, and it's about earth grave. So that's a whole story in, connected to that rune, but it might be something you might want to work with, an earth grave rune in the West. Quarth is the fire twirl. It's a fire rune, and it's about cremation. It can be done with cremation. They used to put bodies on the boats and set the boats on fire and push them out into the ocean. So Quarth is connected to that. And then that would also be the body being consumed by fire, going up in smoke and ash. And then the wind, you might work with Quarth in an interesting way of when the wind is blowing and it's bringing the smoke and it's bringing the ash of the ancestors that we have cremated. You know, do I smell death? I also say that about the AR rune, because if there's a rotting corpse that needs to be buried, you're going to smell that. What do you smell? What do you taste? What do you see? What do you hear when you're looking in that direction? We've already talked about Dagaz. Hagalaz is a rune that's technically called the rune of a hailstorm or a hailstone. Hagel is actually a word for hail. So it's a storm rune, and one of the beings that is connected to changing the weather and bringing storms, and particularly at wintertime, is Hela. Mm-hmm. So Hela is very often, death is very often connected to the Hagalaz rune. And so you might want to put Hagalaz up in the north when it's stormy, cold, icy weather. But you may find it sitting in the west because you may be doing some work with Hela, who welcomes the dead. And it's great to have a relationship with her because you're going to go see her eventually anyway, right? None of us ever like to talk about that, do we?
I don't know. I think the interesting thing, the other day I was working with Hagalaz and reading something about how actually it's not, didn't class hail as an ice crystal, but as an ice corn.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back to the corn of the kernel of salt. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might not have used the word crystal. Interesting. Okay, nice.
And how that when it fell, then it melted and created that rebirth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of whatever.
Yeah, and it's rapid. It's, you know, and it's a second rune that has ice in it.
Mm-hmm.
As we have, so this also, this is not a system, a spiritual system that comes from the desert. JC and the boys didn't know too much about ice and hail.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, wandering around with their little robes and no genitals. And did anybody ever see a genitals of any of these gods from the Christian religions or the Jewish religions? No. Never. They don't have any genitals.
They were all girding their loins.
That's right. Because they didn't want anybody to know they didn't have anything. Go to Pompeii if you ever want to really see some cool stuff. The paintings and things in Pompeii. Priapus, who's got such a big dick that he has to push it around in a wheelbarrow. it's amazing. And, you know, this is the thing. We have to laugh about our spirituality rather than have this, like, shriveled up, prim and proper, don't talk about it kind of thing. That's not this spiritual practice. It's not about prim and proper. I'm never prim and proper. So Hagalaz. Next rune that I had you write down was Kenaz. Kenaz is a rune of inner wisdom, inner knowing. It's like a little wedge. It's kind of like going into the dark and opening the dark up so that you can see, but to be able to see without needing light, which is also a practice of working in the West. What's it like to sit and let it get gradually dark and see what you can see without light? Kenaz. And then Kenaz also, if you'll work with it, is a rune to help you tap into the ancestral wisdom. Hear the great song. And the last one that I gave you was Nadiz. And we'll talk a little more extensively about this rune. This is the rune. It's a straight vertical line with a shorter diagonal line. Navis. So straight vertical, and then from upper left diagonally down to lower right, but the line is actually shorter. You can find it.
Like that?
Let me see. No, that's Lagus. It's, may I draw in
this?
Yes. Okay. So it's like this, and then it's like that.
Oh, okay. Got it. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Navis. So it's called the rune of the bow drill or the fire twirl. And if you've never started a fire with rubbing two sticks or twirling two sticks, it's quite an experience and it's not easy.
It's not.
It's not easy. You have to really have all the conditions right to be able to start a fire by doing that or even like striking flint. But they used to, not everybody had access to flint. So they rubbed sticks together.
Take
so
some strength and perseverance.
Yes, yeah, a lot of perseverance and whenever always light two sources is what they say. Never light one candle, always light two. Or two pieces of whatever, little piles of sticks. Well, the reason that this is here is that this rune is also called the rune of necessity or the need, NYD, the need rune. And there are some old customs that you can read about in different places that involve these need fires that were started in the fall at about the time of the harvest and also the killing of the livestock or the hunt, bringing in the wild game. That and they would create, we call them bonfires now, and the word bonfire comes from bones, the bone fires, and that they burned the stuff that they weren't, they killed the animals and they made these great fires, bonfires, and then the ash was considered really powerful and potent. They would save that ash to sprinkle on the fields in the spring or, you know, just depended on how the weather cycle was, whether they used it in the fall or whether they kept it until the spring and plowed it in when they turned the soil. And they would then drive their living livestock between the fires or over the ash of the fire that is burned down. These were called need fires, connected to the Navis. One interesting practice that was involved in this was the extinguishing of all the fires in a village or in a group of houses that, you know, maybe it's all the same clan or the same grouping of people. So here we are, we're going into winter, we're going into the dark, we're going into possibly the hungry time, and everybody puts their fire out. Now that's pretty dangerous because you know that they also didn't have easy ways to start fire, and fire was considered very magical and definitely connected to the gods. You always prayed. You always prayed when you worked with fire. Even again, we can go back to the old Celtic traditions of why did, when you were banking the fire at night before you went to bed, you sang, you prayed to the either Bridget or one of the hearth goddesses. You always brought the gods and the goddesses into your work with fire because fire came from the gods. And in the Norse tradition, the oldest ancestor, the being who is fire, is Surt, S-U-R-T, Surt. So he was there in the beginning when the chaos of the realm of fire came to the realm of ice. Surt was steering the fires of Muspelheim. So you put out all the fires, and then, doesn't matter if it was the priest or the shaman or whatever, or in some cases it was actually the people in the village worked together. I've seen where they've had these big poles, and they tied the ropes around them, and then they did like tug of war, pulley back and forth, to so they worked as a team to start a single fire. And that was the necessity fire. They had, so they started a fire for the village, restarted a fire. And from that fire, everyone went forward with their stick or whatever and took fire from the need fire and went back to their homes and relit their hearth. Bless you, bless you, bless you. So that then was about trust and about belief. And about ritual that had significance because it was participatory. And we don't do things like that anymore either because we take it for granted. So how much of what we just expect. Do you need a tissue? Because there's second big drawer down behind Teresa.
Okay.
There's lots of boxes of tissue.
Perfect, thank you.
So We take things for granted until we have a power outage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we run out of matches or everything, you know, everything is wet. We don't know how to survive because we just depend upon flipping the switch and going to the grocery store. So Nadis is a wonderful rune to work with also in the West, realizing that as you were going into the dark and you were going into the cold, you had a necessity to have fire, and that fire couldn't be taken for granted, and that it was a need that you had to be willing to work at. There had to be effort and persistence and determination and resistance. You have to have resistance to start a fire with the Nadis rune. So there are things in life that aren't about the power of now and positive thinking and the law of attraction and flow and white light and all the stuff we get. Sometimes you have to work at something and you can't oil the sticks. Because if you oil the sticks, you can't start a fire. Is that not true?
Mm-hmm.
Some of you have heard me say that before. But we get caught in this thing. It's like, well, this, if it was meant to be, it should be easy. That can be true, but it isn't always true. Because if it was meant to be for them to have a fire, and they had to work at it. And you don't keep rubbing the sticks once the fire starts, because that's the foolishness, you know. You don't need to do that when you've got the fire going, but you need to do it before you have the fire. So there's also the wisdom in the West of, can you put everything away, can you put everything out, put all the fires out, and know that you still need a fire, and know that it's going to take everything that you have to start it again? Well, why would I put it out? Why would I do that? Go ahead.
Because someday the fire might go out and you need to know how to start it again.
Exactly.
You need that knowledge.
Right. Yes, exactly. And that's the wisdom and the discernment that's present in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Is you do need to know how to do that. And if you, this is so true in many things in our life, is that sometimes we have to actually put everything out. And that's trust. That's trusting the gods. Sometimes we have to lay everything on the line, like one of the rune writers talks about. Sometimes it's not enough to burn your house down and walk away. You need to forget your name. And that's so powerful when you really sit with that. Because as long as we still have our name, we walk away with our story. And I can't do that, and that's not possible, and this is how it happened before, and la, la, la. And it didn't ever happen before, because this is the first time, and you don't know who you are, and you're going to have to work at starting this fire, and what you learn from that comes to you from the ancestors, because they're there with the fire, and so, you know, our oldest ancestor being Surt. Because we descended from the giants just like the gods did. Just read the stories. We're not separate. We're not separate from anything on the earth. We're just all part of the cycle. And the question you want to always ask is, where did I enter the story? Where did I enter the circle? Because the story is ongoing. How many creations? How many destructions? How many ice ages? How many global warmings? How many extinctions? It doesn't matter. It's like, where are we in the story now? Because it's gone on before, and it's going to go on again. Now we're just part of something that's really beautiful and endless. And it had no beginning and it had no ending. And that's the beauty also working with the circle. And placing any of the runes in any place. It doesn't really matter. They're not specific. Some of them have more of a poignant teaching. But you don't have to get married to the idea that this color has to be here and this animal has to be here, because once that happens, it's formulaic and you lose the ability to know. Because if you're stuck with the jaguar in wherever they put the jaguar, and there you are, and you say, I don't need the wisdom of the jaguar today, I'm facing south and I need to know about the swan. That's right. That makes sense. But you don't go there. It's like, I can't do that because I have to light the candle and, you know, it has to be done a certain way. And that, to me, is the same thing that's the trap and the ugliness of religions that are based upon text. I don't know what to do. I'm going to look for chapter 25, verse 34 in the book of Hezekiah, you know, and that'll tell me what to do. Thou shalt not kill. But you know what? In some circumstances, you need to. You don't go to the book and read it. You check in with your sovereignty, you check in with yourself, and you say, at this moment, where am I? What's going on? What do I know? What do I need to do that is with honor and integrity and wisdom and discernment? And it has nothing to do with finding some place in a formulaic book that tells you what to do, because that can never cover every circumstance. Right. And then we're always guilty. We're always looking for the one right answer. We're full of shame. We're full of guilt. And then we get manipulated that way. And it's a very different place to stand with the integrity of yourself and to make a decision. And sometimes we, you know, I may not agree with that, but I will decide to do it this way because I don't want to suffer the consequences. Sometimes we make choices, you know, we have to decide that, don't we? Or I'm going to do it this way because I need to. I don't care what happens. I have to live with myself. But we don't ever do these. We don't give ourselves often enough time to do this because we're so busy following the rule. And so we don't develop discernment. We have a huge amount of information. We have a huge amount of knowledge. We have very little wisdom. And most of us don't know how to discern things. Discern means to sort. Discernment is actually about sorting. Putting things, you know. Here's a pile of beans. Do you know the difference between the lentils and the black-eyed peas? And the rocks? How many of you cooked beans with rocks, right? We don't even do that anymore, do we? You know, it was always, you had to always sort the beans. You had to always go through and pick out what wasn't good and pick the rocks out and the clumps of mud. And we were having a conversation about that the other day, my sister and I, and we were farm girls, you know, we grew up, my grandmother was from the farm, and they'd come across in covered wagons from Illinois, and she said, you know why we sift the flour? You know, back in the 50s, you were sold because it made it was the bugs. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't about having a light cake. They sold you a sifter to have your cake be fluffy. No, it had to do with, you had to sift your flour to get the weevils out.
Yeah.
So you sifted the flour, and the weevils were in the sieve, and you dumped them out, and, you know, yes, you ate flour with weevils, because if you didn't, you'd starve to death. And you sifted everything.
And it was healthier flour anyhow.
Because they were eating it because it had some nutrients. That's also discernment, isn't it?
Yeah.
To sift.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, to me, the beauty of the West. It's just this really beautiful wisdom of silence and going into the dark and paying attention at the harvest. What's showing up in your life right now? It's not there as a surprise because most likely you planted it. Somebody give me the time again. For some reason it won't.
It's 10 till 9.
Okay, good. I know I kept you late last week, so sorry. So here's some, there's a series of questions that you can go through, you know, kind of using this information. For instance, going back to gleaning to explore. What would be the purpose for leaving things behind in the field for the poor and the strangers, the widows and the orphans? Have you ever left something in the fields? Huh, I've never done, people don't get too literal. Have you ever left something in the fields? Have you ever been a gleaner? And not just literally, but bigger, on a bigger way. How would this aspect of the wheel and the direction of the West be translated into modern times regarding waste of food? Then the other thing is, with regard to like looking at a harvest, using wisdom, looking at something in your life right now that's come to completion. So every time something is ending, something else is going to be happening, always. So this is the end of the season. This is the West is about the endings that are also the beginnings. What in your life do you need to gather in right now? What do you need to leave out in the field? Because that's hard sometimes. Sometimes we don't just bring it all in, even if there's nothing wrong with it. We may just choose to plow something in or let it rot because the field needs to be re-nourished.
Yes, I'm putting some compost.
What actions, what requires no action on your part? We don't have to take the leaves off the trees, do we? Some things in the fall just happen all by themselves. So sometimes we just have to leave things alone. What it will be taken care of by nature, just as a natural cycle and rhythm. And is there something in your life that has a sense of urgency? Is there something that's imminent beyond your control? Or is there something in your life that you need to just be patient and wait for it?
Good old patient life.
Well, yes, and these are just, this is again, whenever you find like anxiety or impatience or push trying to ripen before, trying to gas the cantaloupes to make, or the bananas or whatever, take your staff, step into the center, turn and face the direction of the setting sun, and ask yourself, where am I? What's going on? And what wisdom can come to me from what happens in the West at the time of coming of winter, at the time of harvest, at the time of going into the dark? What do my ancestors have to say? They are experienced. They lived through this already. They would know. So questions like that that you can take with you into the wheel, and let's see, there's one more thing that I want to go through. There's also I want to talk just a little bit about another aspect that I find fascinating is as it got dark, they could see the stars. And the ancients had intimate connection with and knowledge of what was in the heavens. Now, whether they thought the stars were really close or far away, we have no idea. They saw patterns in the sky, and it's very possible that they saw the same patterns on the earth. We can't prove that. You know, we can do the ley lines and the energy lines and all that, but we know that they understood the movement of the heavens. They saw the stars rise up in the sky, go across the heavens at night and disappear. The stars were going the same place the sun was going, that the moon was going. And there was constantly a movement of constellations. And they didn't have the same constellations that we are so fixated on through the systems that come out of Mesopotamia and Sumeria and Babylon. They did not see the same. They saw some of the things, but they saw different things, and they named them differently. Mm-hmm. So this is a proposal that I, you know, haven't done a lot of research on, and I'll probably be dead before I can get answers. But you know, we're so used to talking about astrology, and I'm born under this sign, which has to do with a constellation in the heavens, and that means that I have this kind of personality, and I do things this way, and you know, that's pretty accurate, pretty valid. Maybe for some people, maybe not. I would have a sense that our ancestors did the same thing, understood something about the heavens and its and their connection with energy on the earth and people. Going into the Norse tradition and knowing that the Norse had this whole system of 9 worlds. So what if they, instead of 12 signs of the zodiac, what if they had 9 worlds? Because each one of the worlds was inhabited by different kinds of beings. And what if, if you were born under the sign of the world of Muspelheim, you came in with characteristics of Muspelian? They're firefighters. They love to work with blacksmithing. They, you know, I'm just, okay, so anything with fire. They are pyromaniacs. They need to live where it's warm. So here's the constellation of Muspelheim, and it looks like a flaming sword. Doesn't matter. So I'm born under the sign of the flaming sword of Muspelheim. What if when you die, you go to the realm of whatever was in the sky at the time of your death? What if you died under the realm of Niflheim, you then went to Niflheim, and when you were born under the sign of Niflheim, and now you came back from the realm of the ice. It's not any more far-fetched than believing in astrology, is it? Because astrology is what? Well, I'm a Cancer. Well, what does that mean? Why is it called Cancer? And what are the characteristics of Cancer? And why is it connected to a crab? And people born under that sign have certain characteristics. So it's not any, it's like kind of strange to put our mind around it, but if you take that away from the Eastern, you know, Near Eastern religions of the land between the rivers, Mesopotamia, all that down there, mm-hmm. and you come home to the north, and you start looking at people who lived in the north who, and we know they had these constellations, and that they, I mean, it's referenced in the sagas, and they built amazing monuments that were lined up with stars. It's just, to me, worth exploring and not always falling into the teachings that are have been handed to us from cultures other than our own. And there's more and more of it's written. There's, you know, some great books that have some of this information. There's one called Island of the Setting Sun, which is about Ireland and the star, some of the constellations and star maps and that they're finding and understanding in Ireland. So, I mean, it's out there. You're not going to find it on page one of Google. Go to page five or six.
Does it actually have five pages?
Yeah, that's right. Right under the ads. So it takes the novice. There is a necessity. You have to persist. You have to work at it. You have to have a desire to do these things. And it's time. Not that you're going to, you know, stop your day job and that's what you're studying, but I really invite more and more and more people to start looking at this and bringing it back, because I believe that there's wisdom here that we're missing, just like being colorblind. We've removed this from the spiritual spectrum and we're colorblind. So put it back in and we'll be able to see more things, and with that we'll be able to have a wisdom that's perhaps a piece that's part of the survival that we're facing right now. People, we need the wisdom of the North. We need West. The wisdom.
Hmm? Of the West. Oh, of the North.
Of the North. We need the wisdom of the West as it exists within the wisdom of the North. We need the wheel. We need the runes, because we, and I can't do it all myself. Okay, I'm just tired. So that's it for tonight. That's all we're going to talk about. We're going to move up to the North next week. So, homework. Work with the center. Work with the staff. Step into the center and turn and face the West. Check in with the ancestors. Check in with the harvest. Go through. You've got the access to the page. You've got notes from classes in 2014, 2006. You can download them, you can read them. It's all there. And live it, work with it, mm-hmm. enjoy it. And thank you for sitting and coming and listening, because mm-hmm. I am passionate about what I do.
Can I take a picture of your northern...
Yes, you can do whatever you want. I'm turning this off first, though, okay?
And I do at some point want to...